if you have questions, then just raise your hand and I have to confirm the recording. Okay. And yes, so after this beautiful lecture of Adam last week, where he really addressed a lot of general things on effective theories, I'm going to focus really on the application of this effective theory, mainly to beings. And there will be four lectures, two today, and then another two on Thursday. And today I will talk mainly about the effective theory of weak interactions in the standard model that is important for BDKs. And in the afternoon, I will focus on exclusive leptonic and semi-leptonic charged current decays. So this is maybe interesting for Bell 2 people and LHCb people. And I am afraid that these lectures may be a bit longer. So the third lecture will be a bit shorter on inclusive semi-leptonic decays. But I think this is also an interesting theoretical approach that has different systematics, and it is interesting to know about it. And then in the fourth lecture, I wanted to address a bit these E anomalies. So today, in the first lecture, I will focus on the effective theory of weak interactions in the standard model. And in the first part, I would like to just to review and remind you of many things in the standard model that you're probably familiar with. And then the consequences for flavor transitions from the standard model. After that, I will give you a short introduction to EFT, but you probably will be familiar with that after Adam's lecture. This is a simple case of muon decay, but then you can see many features of the standard model, many particular things of the standard model that may be not there when you have new physics beyond it. And then in the later part, I would like to talk about the delta B equals one effective theory that is important for semi-leptonic B decays and also hadronic ones. So let us start with the standard model, flavor in the standard model. So Adam has given you in the introduction this picture of his ladder of effective theories going from lower to higher energies. And here I just want to remind you that going from former times to newer times, how our notions of what matter is have changed. So we started with elements, like then we understood there are atoms. The atoms are nuclei and the electron shell around them. We understood that nuclei are composed of protons and neutrons. And this is actually the first time where flavor sneaked in into the phenomenology. So proton and neutron are different by flavor. And then later there came the discovery of a particle zoo. And eventually people introduced these quarks in the beginning in some dubious objects, but now we think they're reality. And in the development of in these phenomenological discoveries, the standard model was shaped. And actually with the, each discovery of new particles and new degrees of freedom in some sense, we used effective theories and built up knowledge about describing these experimental observations that led us eventually to the standard model as we have it today. So please let me just remind you that the first flavor transition probably was the beta decay of the neutron. And Fermi, Enrico Fermi, he proposed his Fermi theory in 1933-34 just by simply writing down a four Fermi interaction. So it is a dimension six object because proton and neutrons are spin 1/2 and they are described also by spinor wave functions. And in front of it, he just wrote this Fermi coupling that had to be determined from experiment. And this is a dimensionful coupling. Then later it was understood that proton and neutrons are, or it was hypothesized probably, they made out of quarks, up and down quarks, and they have different electrical charge. and they found by strong nucleons. So I think someone has a, yes. And yes, and when it was also understood that the weak interaction, the dry disk decay, can be presented by a mediator, a heavy W boson, then it was clear that the Fermi's approach is just an effective picture of some underlying gauge interactions that are described by local gauge invariants. So the standard model is a consequence of all these historical developments, and it is really close to the phenomenological observations at the time to fulfill them. So there are some general principles that we employ in the standard model, and what we actually would like to do is to test these principles also at higher energies. So these principles are relativistic quantum field theory and scattering formalism with asymptotic states. And here the Lorentz symmetries really describe imposed restrictions on the presentations we can use for the fields and also on the interactions. And then we use a local gauge invariant in order to introduce interactions between these matter fields usually. And by imposing local gauge invariants, we automatically introduce gauge fields, and they are by gauge symmetry protected, so they are massless. And the phenomenological observations force us to introduce some mechanism that allows to have a massive gauge particles. So this is done with a spontaneous symmetry breaking. And in the simplest way, this can be done by postulation of a Higgs field. So with these principles, the standard model is built, and the ingredients are spin 1/2 particles that are leptons and quarks. And then there's this one spin 0 field, the Higgs field, and those we call matter fields. And we require them to have certain transformations on the local gauge symmetries. But let me remind you that these spin 1/2 fields, they come in three generations. And they are made out of left-handed fields and right-handed fields. Only for the neutrinos, we do not introduce right-handed fields. And the interactions between these spin 1/2 and spin 0 fields, they are given by the Yukawa terms. And then the Higgs field has its own potential with a mass term and a quartic term. Now, by imposing certain transformation properties under local gauge groups, also gauge interactions are introduced. And here we have three gauge groups. So the strong interactions of quarks is described by this SU3 color. We have a hypercharge, U1. And then, most important here for understanding flavor also, is this SU2 left. So we have the left-handed fields that transform as duplets, and the right-handed fields that transform always as singlets. And the Higgs field is also introduced as a duplet. Now you can see there are three parameters, gauge couplings associated with these gauge groups. And from here we have two from the Higgs potential, and then these Yukawa couplings are in general 3x3 complex value. And after the symmetry breaking, we obtain a residual U1 electromagnetic gauge symmetry. So there's a massless photon associated with that. And we have massive gauge fields, the W and the Z boson. And also the leptons and quarks become massive. And the masses they get from these Yukawa couplings. And this way I will explain in more detail later on. What we will see is that there are only 18 parameters in the standard model, if one omits the neutrino masses and also this CP violating parameter in the QCD Lagrangian. So in the following, I would like to really to remind you how this works, where this comes from, these masses, because this is really the origin of flavor in the standard model. And yes, so we have the left-handed fields, and they are organized as duplets under SE2. And then we have the right-handed fields that are singlets under SE2. And we implement local gauge invariance with the help of this covariant derivative. So there are appearing these gauge fields of the three gauge groups, and depending on whether these fields are charged, they will act on these. And here I have suppressed some group indices from SE2 and SE3. But if you write them out, things come a bit more lengthy. So let us focus on the SU2 part that is important here. So only the duplets will interact with this term. And what we see is that here these generators are the Pauli matrices. And if you remember, they can have a, there's only one Pauli matrix, the third one that is diagonal here. And so it will connect the U left with the U left and the D left with the D left. On the other hand, the first two Pauli matrices, they are off diagonal. So on the diagonal, they have zeros. So they will connect the U left with the down left and the vice versa. So this is important to remember. Now, the gauge interactions are just written down as a field ED slash field. And by gauge, local gauge invariance, it is forbidden to have mass terms because those would consist of left and right-handed fields combinations. And what is also interesting is that this gauge Lagrangian, it has a huge, it can be rotated in the following way by rotating each field with a separate unitary matrix. It remains invariant because this covariant derivative, it does not know anything about this generation index. So this gauge interaction Lagrangian has a huge global flavor symmetry. And we call these states here weak eigenstates if the gauge interaction is generation diagonal. Now, after that, we let us have a look on the other part of the Lagrangian, that is the interaction with the Higgs field. And here we have to combine the Higgs doublet with the quark doublet to give a SU2 singlet. And then we can multiply with a right-handed, either up singlet or down singlet. And here the couplings are not diagonal generation space. So there are no constraints from local gauge invariant that would forbid that these Yukawa couplings would be not generation non-diagonal. So they are in general 3x3 complex valued couplings. Now, what happens in the Higgs mechanism is that the Higgs acquires a BEV. We have seen this also in Adam's lecture. So the neutral component, the lower one, becomes a BEV, gets a BEV. And then we have also this Woodby-Goldstone bosons that will combine with the gauge fields to give the massive W and Z bosons. So for discussion of masses, we just consider the first term and concentrate on that. So if we plug this term into here, then there can be these two products. So here, this is a scalar product, and this is like a cross product. And each time they project out one of the components. So what happens in this first one, it projects out of the Q left, the U left. And what happens in the second one, it projects out of the Q left, the D left. And then we have these mass terms. They have structure of a left-handed field times a right-handed field. But what we have in front of it are matrices that are not diagonal in this generation space. So they we have non-diagonal mass terms. And yes, I introduce here this MU and MD in terms of the Yukawa couplings times the VEF. So what we would like to do next, this is all in weak eigenstates. We would like to diagonalize these mass matrices to go to mass eigenstates. Yes, and how this can be done? This can be done only if we rotate the U left and the U right with two different matrices, such that this MU becomes diagonal. So this is the condition how to find these matrices. And the same happens, the U left and the U right, we have to, and also the D left and the D right for this second term, those we have to rotate. And after we do that, the new states are called mass eigenstates, because then the mass matrices are diagonal. But now, if you remember, in the gauge interactions for the SU2 duplets, what will happen there? We could rotate them, the Q left, all both components with the same, and then it would keep the gauge interactions invariant. But now, to make the Yukawa couplings diagonal, we have to rotate U left and D left with separate rotation matrices. So let us have a look at what happens here. I wrote this again. Now, if you remember, in this D slash, we have the Pauli matrices. And the third Pauli matrix was diagonal. So we'd connect U left with U left. And this rotation matrix UL and UL decker, they will just cancel because this is a unitary matrix. But if you look at the terms with the Pauli matrices 1 and 2, you combine the U left with the down left and vice versa. And this time, the rotation matrices do not cancel. So we remain with this product that is flavor, this is generation, not diagonal. So it distinguishes, it mixes for different generations. And this product of diagonalization matrices, we call the Kabibo-Kobayashi-Maskawa matrix, or the quark mixing matrix. In more general, it's a quark mixing matrix. In the standard model, it's the CKM matrix. So what happens from going from weak to mass eigenstates is that the gauge interactions of the left-handed fields become flavor of diagonal. And of course, what I forgot to say, also the diagonalized mass matrices, they have different eigenvalues. So they give, this is why we have different flavors. So the generations become flavors in some sense, because the Yukawa coupling distinguishes them all. So this is the origin of flavor in the standard model. And the consequence of that is that in the standard model, we have also only one coupling in the mass eigenbasis that changes flavors. And this is the coupling to the W boson. So it brings up quarks to down quarks that have different electrical charges into different generations. The CKM matrix itself is a unitary matrix by construction, because it's a product of two unitary rotation matrices. It is responsible for CP violation, because we have three generations. With two generations, this would not work. There would not need to be CP violation. Now, the unitary matrix has in principle 9 parameters, but since we can rephase, we can choose the phase of these 5 of these 6 quark fields that appear in this coupling freely, we can remove 5 real parameters. So in the end, the CKM matrix is described by 4 real parameters. And together with the 6 quark masses, these are the 10 real parameters that describe flavor in the standard model. So measuring these parameters is all we can do about learning about flavor in the standard model. And this means we should look at all the flavor changing processes, and also processes that are maybe not predicted by the standard model, and then try to overdetermine all the CKM parameters. Okay. Is there any question so far? Now, just let me remind you a bit what the CKM matrix is. It is this unitary matrix. So we have conditions on this rows and columns from unitarity. And this is usually represented in terms of unitarity triangles. So these conditions have to relate three complex numbers, then we divide by one so that we have one on this base. And then the other two sides should close because of this equation. And then depending on which rows and columns one takes, one has different triangles. So there are six of them. But the one that is shown here is the one that is appearing most in the phenomenological applications. And what we need is a parameterization of this 3x3 matrix in terms of the four parameters. But there are a lot of ways how one can do that. So this is a convention dependence. One chooses a convention and then one sticks with it. But on the other hand, of course, there's something that is independent on these conventions. So it's something that is invariant under the refacing of these quark fields. And these things are these products of four CKM matrix elements, the imaginary part of them. And this is called sometimes plaquettes. And what turns out is that for a 3x3 case, one sees that all these plaquettes are equivalent. So there's only a single number. And this is a measure of the P violation, also known as the Yarskog invariant. And this Yarskog invariant is simply twice the area of these unitarity triangles. And all the unitarity triangles have the same area. And it is measured to be rather small in the standard model. So, also there are parameterizations, and in the PDG, it is given in terms of three angles and one phase. So you can think of rotations in this flavor space in three rotations, 1, 3, 2, 3, 1, 2. And this gives this weird structure of a sine and cosine of these angles. What is more useful for phenomenology is this Wolfenstein parameterization. And it is an expansion in this small Khabibian angle, VUS. And you can see it here to order lambda to the 4. So on the diagonal, it's almost 1. The first of diagonal is order lambda. The second is lambda squared. And then the most of diagonal is a lambda to the cube. And it is really now the convention where the imaginary phase appears. Okay, so now we know what the flavor means in the standard model. We have to measure the CKM matrix and have a look what kind of flavor transitions are allowed in the standard model. And what one sees is that there are two typical decays. So if we work at tree level, we can only exchange a W. So we call this a charged current, because the initial quarks, they are of up type and down type, so they have different charge. And then the W can decay into either a lepton pair, neutrino pair, or into other quarks. And so we have leptonic or semi-leptonic decays and hadronic decays. And these semi-leptonic and leptonic decays, they depend on a single CKM matrix from here, from this coupling, times the Fermi constant. That comes from the product of these two SU2 left couplings and the W mass. In the hadronic decays, on the other hand, we can measure products of two CKM matrix elements. And now, if you want to have a transition where both quarks have the same charge, either down quarks or either up quarks, then you have to go to loop level. And the way this proceeds is that the down quark changes with a W into an up quark, and then in the loop, there can be all three types of up quarks, so an up charm and top, and then you have a down quark again. And usually you need some, by momentum conservation, at least a third particle. It can be a photon, a Z boson, or gluon. And then they can decay into either lepton pair, neutrino pair, or into another meson. So this dependence of the amplitude in these FCNC decays, flavor-changing neutral current decays, involves the sum of all the internal quarks times the product of CKM matrix elements that appear here in these two couplings, times a function that depends on the quark masses of these internal quarks. And you can also have these box type diagrams. And what we then do, if the external quarks are very light, we do replace this by an effective theory. And this is a generalization of the Fermi theory. So the first diagram is more or less the beta decay. And now we have a Wilson coefficient and effective coupling. In this case, it is in the standard model usually given by the CKM matrix elements. Here in this case, it involves this, you remember, it involves this blue function and the sum over the CKM matrix elements. And this can be done for all quarks that are not the top quark, that are sufficiently lighter than the W boson. So also what is indicated here that this propagator just shrinks. And Adam gave us already an example of this tree-level matching. And what is done also usually, this is normalized to this Fermi constant that we measure in the muon decay. Okay. Now to give you an impression, what kind of tree-level decays we have to measure the first two rows, you can see here. So we can have either leptonic decays or semi-leptonic decays for all of these first and second row matrix elements. On the other hand, for those that involve top, we usually use a neutral b-meson mixing. So this is a loop-induced process, and it is very sensitive to these two elements. But on the other hand, it is also very sensitive to new physics, because the standard model contribution here is already suppressed by a loop. And if you look in practice, how the CKM mechanism in the standard model works, we have a lot of input that is listed here. It's all small, so it's not important to understand it all. I marked those that come from B decays with red, so there are a lot of them. And all this input is used to extract CKM parameters, either in the Wolfenstein parameterization or in the PDG parameterization. And over the years, we gained a lot of knowledge about the CKM, and it seems to work. So you can compare with 2003, this unitarity triangle was not very well determined compared to what we know nowadays. And so each of these colored contours implies a different observable and the associated experimental and theoretical uncertainties. And these fits are done by CKM fitter. So this is in France. And then there's also a UTFIT collaboration, which is a bit more global, but mainly Italian. Yes. And what you find from all these observations is that the masses and the CKM parameters, so all the parameters that are associated with flavor, that they are very hierarchical. So the lepton and also the quark masses are very hierarchical within each of the three generations. So this is seen here. And also the CKM matrix is very hierarchical. So on the diagonal, we have close to one entries, and then they fall off with order lambda the further you go away from the diagonal. What is also interesting for downtype FC and CD case, so if you remember, there you have also always three diagrams with an up quark, with a charm quark, and a top quark internally. They depend on these CKM contributions, CKM matrix combinations. So for B2S, we have VTB, VTS, which is close to VCB, VCS, and they have order lambda squared. And the up quark contribution is suppressed with respect to those with lambda squared, because it scales like lambda to the fourth. Yes, so if you look, yeah. And then for B to D transitions, we find that all these combinations scale equally, like lambda to the third. And now for the S to D transition, there are two combinations, VCDS and VCD, and VUS, VUD, that scale like lambda. And then there's the third one, which scales like VTS, VTD scales like lambda to the fourth, a fifth. So it is suppressed by lambda to the fourth with respect to the others. And here you already can see that this huge hierarchy can sometimes bring problems in, in phenomenology. So usually the top contribution, the diagram with the top quark, it is enhanced by the top quark mass, but now it is suppressed with CKM compared to the other diagrams that are usually suppressed with charm and up masses. So in S to D transition, one has to be a bit careful, more careful in phenomenology, and then sometimes even, now I'm anticipating a bit, sometimes dimension 8 contributions in the electroweak OPE, still phenomenology important, because this dimension, leading dimension 6 from the top, is so much suppressed by CKM. But this usually does not affect the B-meson decays. Okay. So this is like an introduction to where flavor comes from in the standard model and which parameters in the standard model are associated with flavor and which kind of processes we can have in the standard model. So this is really important. We have charged current and neutral FC and C processes. And the first one, they proceed at tree level, and the second one, they are loop suppressed. So they also more sensitive to new physics, because new physics might be, the standard model contribution is loop suppressed, so new physics might have a chance to compete with that. Okay. So this brings me to my first example, if you don't have questions. So I think Adam already gave this example, or a similar example, the muon decay. So this is just the W tree level exchange. Muon decays in the anti-muon neutrino and the electron and its corresponding neutrino. And Adam has already shown us that if you write down the amplitude, you have these two vertices here, this one and this one. So with P left, I always denote 1/2, 1 minus gamma 5. And then this intermediate W propagator can be simply expanded if you think of being in the rest frame of the muon. Because in the rest frame of the muon, this momentum transfer here, it can be only of the order of the muon mass squared. So it is really small compared to the W. And what we remain with is a four Fermi interaction with these leptons. And it has a global factor that comes from here, from these two couplings. And in more technical terms, this is an operator product expansion. Adam has already shown us how one can do that also in the path integral. And here we kept only the dimension 6 contribution. We could go to higher orders here in this expansion to have dimension 8 contributions and so on. Now, the same we could have obtained from an effective theory as Fermi wrote it down. Now we just have this effective coupling. We call these usually operators, and they have some coupling. And here I've pulled out some numerical factor. We can calculate the amplitude in this effective theory. It looks like that. And then we can determine the effective coupling in terms of the standard model one by just requiring that both amplitudes are the same. And this is called matching. So we find that this Wilson coefficient in the standard model is like 1 over v squared. It's 1 over v squared and the square root of 2. Or it's inverse proportional to the W mass. Now, if you do phenomenology, we can try to determine this Wilson coefficient. And this can be done with the muon lifetime, which is very well measured. Well, so we simply take the effective theory amplitude v squared and we integrate over the phase space of the outgoing particles, the electron and the neutrinos. And what we obtain is more or less this result. The inverse of the lifetime is given by the square of the Wilson coefficient. There are some small phase space corrections that usually also include some radiative corrections. And we can determine the Wilson coefficient. And what is done in practice is that we include QED corrections. So there are higher order QED corrections to the effective theory amplitude and also from real emission. And this is known to higher orders, so and can be absorbed in this delta. And then we can still, with these corrections, extract the Wilson coefficient. And this Wilson coefficient is known as Fermi's constant. But yes, maybe we can see the definition of Fermi's constant for phenomenological reason is more appropriate in terms of this being the constant that appears in the muon lifetime expression when including all the QED corrections. Okay, so let me show you what happens. Let me show you what we can do with this precise determination of this Wilson coefficient. We can go back to our matching equation and infer this ratio, G2 squared over MW squared, or simply the VEF. And we have an order of the scale of the VEF that is responsible for electric spinometry breaking. Now, what people do in practice, they include higher order corrections to this matching in the standard model. So let me remind you what I mean by that. Matching in the standard model means higher order correction means that to this diagram, they include radiative corrections like a Z boson exchange between muon electron or photons or even a neutral Higgs or additional W's. Then there will be box type diagrams where internally there are also leptons and so on. And they can even go to higher order like two loop radiative corrections. And these radiative corrections are simply denoted here by this delta R, and they depend on the masses of these additional particles and the coupling. So we can learn something about these standard model parameters from the measurement of this Wilson coefficient from the muon lifetime. Okay. Now, if we would have new physics that would modify this Wilson coefficient by some amount, then we would extract from the Fermi constant the sum of the standard model contribution, the new physics contribution. And then the new physics contribution depends on some additional fundamental parameters. So we cannot use anymore this simple relation, but there will be something new here. So this is the simplest example of a new physics, but you could imagine there's another operator. So let us assume there are only left-handed neutrinos, and then we can add only one additional lepton flavor lepton number conserving operator. It is written down here. So it just contains this projector PR and PL, and there's no additional gamma matrix. That's why we call it scalar, and so SRL operator. Now the EFT has this form, and if you calculate the muon lifetime, there will be additional contributions. So there, besides this CVLL squared, there will be a pure CSRL squared, and then there will be an interference term between those both. And it turns out the interference term is helicity suppressed. Now the muon lifetime is still only one observable, and what is not known are all these QED radiative corrections in the presence of this additional operator. So that's why I put the small subindex zero here to remind you that we don't include all the QED corrections that were known only for the QVLL operator. So in principle, we have now more dependencies here and just one observable. So we can only determine the combined sum of these expression here. Yes. So in the presence of new physics, things become more complicated. You need more observables, and also the precision calculations that were done in the standard model must be extended. And just let me give a small comment. In the last lecture, Adam introduced the standard model effective theory. That is a new physics parameterization that is invariant under the standard model local gauge symmetry. So this is a very restrictive assumption. And in further, it was assumed that there's a new physics scale lambda that is much larger than the WEF. So the standard model contribution here, it scales with 1/V². But all the new physics contribution in SMEFT, they are suppressed by V² / λ² compared to this contribution. So if you then look on this CSRL² term here, it is actually V^4/λ^4 compared to the standard model contribution, it is suppressed by this amount. So we can neglect it in SMEFT. And then this interference term, here we have a standard model part in VLL times this SMEFT suppressed term. So it is in principle scaling V² as the standard model contribution. It is suppressed by λ², but it is not V² over λ^4. So here we could drop it if we assume that helicity suppression is large enough. So in this SMEFT case, we actually can argue that all these complications are not really there, or they are numerically negligible. So if you have a new physics scenario where you cannot do that, then of course you need more parameters and more observables to constrain these parameters. And there are these so-called Michel parameters that you can measure in the angular distribution, where x is the energy of the electron and theta is the angle, the direction of the electron with respect to the muon polarization. These angular observables are known as Michel parameters, but I would call them observables. Of course, they are not parameters in the sense of fundamental parameters that appear in a Lagrangian. And the standard model predicts very specific values, so we can go and measure them, and this is also what has been done in the past. So the only thing I wanted to show you with this example is that this standard model is particularly simple. The flavor structure contains only a few parameters, and this leads to a lot of correlations between many observables that we can test. It also simplifies the determination of the standard model parameters, because you just need maybe dibuon lifetime to extract GS. And yes, also the correlations can be tested more stringently. Now, on the other hand, in the new physics scenario, you have more parameters, more operators, and then you need more observables to pin them all down. And you have less tests because there are less correlations. Okay, so this brings me to the end for this simple phenomenological example. And now I would like to go to BDKs, to the effective theory of BDKs. So if you have some questions, please. Yes, there's one question.
So hello, Christo. So can you please go back maybe two or three slides when we were talking about the connection between the VEV and the Wilson coefficient or G Fermi? Exactly. Thank you. So now my question would be so now I'm a bit puzzled. Does the VEV now get any loop contributions, or how is this regulated? I mean, or is the VEV an observable practically, would this value be the same on one loop or two loop calculations, or?
This is just a tree level relation as it is shown here. Now, if you go to higher orders in electroweak, then you must decide which parameters in the Lagrangian you will take. And then I think usually there are four, MW, MZ, and maybe the mixing angle between them. But you also could work with the VEV and the quartic Higgs coupling. So then you decide which are the fundamental parameters you want to use in the realization. And then you express all the other ones in terms of those. So this is this value of the VEV is obtained here at tree level. If you go to higher orders, then you will renormalize things. And if you decide to renormalize the VEV, then maybe the value will change a bit. But maybe if you decide to use other fundamental parameters and express the VEV in terms of those, then it depends. Does this answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. There are no other questions. I'll just go to the BDKs. Now, as in the muon decay, we have in the rest frame of the B meson, like order of 5 GV. So if the B meson decays, it releases all this 5 GV, but this is very small compared to the internal scales, like the MW or the Zeeplers or Mars. So we can again use this effective theory. And there will be several classes of operators. And here I just show you the standard model diagrams. So there are these charged current operators, and they come from W exchange, and they involve four quarks. So usually it's B to S and C quarks, or B to D and C quarks. Then what concerns hadronic processes, you can have QCD and QD penguin operators. They appear at loop level by this W exchange and internally UCT, and either by irradiating of a gluon that decays into quarks, photons and Z that decay into quarks, or there can be some box. And the analog of this for semileptonic decay are the semileptonic operators here on the left. So again, there's an exchange of W and UCT internally, then you can have a radiation of photon or a Z boson that decays into leptons, or also the Z can decay into neutrino. And then you have these box type topologies. And in between of them, there are these electromagnetic and chromomagnetic dipole operators. And they are from similar diagrams, but here the photon and the gluon are on shell. So this distinguishes these diagrams from this one and this one. Here it is off shell, and here it is meant to be on shell. So these are two distinct operators. And one can calculate all these diagrams by expanding in external momentum, doing quasi an OPE diagrammatically. And then one obtains the operators and their Wilson coefficients. And this is schematically shown here. So they are for Fermi interactions, for the charge current, for the QSD penguins and the semi-leptonic ones. And then for the electromagnetic, chromomagnetic, they have this type of effective Feynman rule. And the Wilson coefficients, they can now depend on the top quark mass and on G Fermi and the CKM matrix elements. Yes, and the dimension six operators, they are very similar to the dimension six operator that you have seen in the muon decay. But I will show you later on. Now, in the same spirit, you can, for example, decouple for the charge current one, the W. The only difference is now that you end up with VCB, VCS star in addition. That was not the case in the muon decay. The effective operator is again like gamma mu p left, gamma mu p left. And we can match this to the standard model and determine this Wilson coefficient. And depending on what kind of normalization, usually people use this normalization, you use, you will end up with this expression. So in the standard model, this Wilson coefficient is minus one if you use VCB, VCS star. But what often is done, one goes to VTB, VTS star by using this approximate unitarity relation. And then this C2 is plus one. Okay. So at tree level, there's only one operator, this O2. Beyond tree level, you can add, for example, QCD correction. And this is where you can see the benefits of doing this effective theory calculations later on. So as Adam also explained to you before, the EFT is also necessary to split large logarithms that appear. So here you can have the B quark mass and here the W mass. So if you calculate this diagram, keeping the B quark mass, regulating infrared divergences with the B quark mass, you will end up with this kind of logs. But then since you have to renormalize, there's also the renormalization scale. So it turns out you can always write the logs in this form in the full theory standard model. Now, if you try to match it on the AFT, then we say the Wilson coefficient itself has an expansion also in alpha s. And this first term we have seen on the last slide, how it is determined, we know it. And now we want to calculate the C1. So in the EFT, we have these two diagrams, the tree level diagrams times the alpha s corrections and the C one loop diagram with C0. Now here they are all, the gluon can be exchanged between all these. So there are several diagrams. I've just shown one. And what turns out is that, first of all, there's another operator where the color indices are now not the same in one quark current, but they are different. This comes from the gluon exchange. And what is important, what happens here in this matching, also Adam showed it explicitly in his result, that there are always terms that are reproduced by the effective theory that appear in the full theory. And these terms always come with this logarithm of the small masses. And they are associated with this diagram. And this is simply because the effective theory reproduces all the low energy dynamics of the full theory. Otherwise, we were not allowed to use this effective theory. So what happens if we equate the full theory with the effective theory, that these logs, they just cancel with these diagrams. And all the large logs, the logarithms with W, they will enter then in this C1. And as also Adam also explained, if we want that these logarithms are small, we have to change, force this renormalization scale to be of the order of MW. And in his example, he simply set it to MW, and this is what this usually does. But it just must be of the order of the MW. So in a one-loop matching, we can determine higher orders to this Wilson coefficient. And the effective theory is such that infrared divergences, this is how we call these logs, do not enter the Wilson coefficient. Okay. Now what you can also then do in the effective theory, you can use a renormalization group equation to run these couplings, the Wilson coefficient from this high scale mu zero to the low scale, where you actually later will calculate in the effective theory. This is done with this renormalization group equation that depends on the anomalous dimension. And the anomalous dimension is simply given, if you go back, is simply given by the divergence of these diagrams here, of these one-loop diagrams. So by calculating these one-loop diagrams, we can extract the anomalous dimension, and we can solve this ordinary differential equation. The formal solution is written here, but let me just show you, for example, what happens if we just use the current operators Q1 and Q2 that I before. So you remember the Q2 has Wilson coefficient 1 at the high scale. The Q1 was not there in three-level matching, so it starts at order alpha s. Now if we calculate the Wilson coefficients with the help of this anomalous dimension and this RGE at the low scale, they're expressed in terms of the Wilson coefficients at the high scale in these terms with some numerical coefficient that depends on the ratio of alpha s at the high scale over the low scale. So this is 0.5 numerically. And if you plug it all in, you can see how the low scale Wilson coefficients depend on the high scale Wilson coefficients. Now in practice, you would set C2 to 1, and then you neglect here this alpha s correction. So you see that C2 changes a bit by a factor 1.1. And then C1 is generated from C2, and this we call mixing. Okay. So just by three-level matching and using the RGE, we would have at low scales C1 and C2, whereas at high scale we might be started at three-level with C2 only. Now let me show you what can also happen with this operator U2. We can insert this operator Q2 in such a diagram. It's also a QCD one loop mixing. And this structure here, it's called is a new structure. It's not neither Q1 nor Q2. And these are the so-called QCD penguin operators. And yes, there are four of them, depending on the structure here and so we can have right in this current here, P left and P right, so there are two operators here. And then also the color structure can be different between the currents. Now these operators themselves, they get a matching contribution at the high scale only at one loop from this diagram. And this is given by this universal function E that depends on the stop mass over the W mass, so it has some numerical value. Now, if you use the RGE equations and calculate the Wilson coefficients of these three, four Wilson coefficients at the low scale, in terms of those at the high scale, you find approximately that these numbers come from the E function, then from O2, you get these coefficients that are substantially larger. And then from or Q1 from this operator Q1, you get this one. And the so C2 is a tree level one. So this is a huge contribution. C1, we know it started order alpha S, so this is a small contribution. And what you can see is that QCD penguin operators are actually at the low scale, mainly due to the tree level Wilson coefficient C2. So again, here also mixing is very important. And these operators, they are, for example, important for phenomenology of a charmless B-meson decays like B to K pi or B to K rho, B to K star, and so on. So at low scale, these Wilson coefficients are mainly due to a tree level matching of Q2 at high scale. And then let me show you in the last two slides the other operators. So there are these people operators. They are a bit different in structure. So there's a B and a strange quark with a sigma mu nu tensor. And this one is contracted with the photon field strength tensor, or in this case here, with the gluon field strength tensor. The diagrams I have shown you in the standard model before, so at this high scale, these Wilson coefficients have some values. And if we now calculate them at low scale, it happens that C8 mixes into C7. So this is not explicitly shown here, but it is contained in this first number. C7 cannot mix into C8 at one loop, also at two. And then we also get contributions from Q2 and Q1. Of course, the one from Q1, they are small because C1 is order alpha S. But the one of Q2, they are not so small, as you can see here. So if you would, for example, change C2 by some 10% with respect to the standard model, then it will affect C7 at the low scale by 6%. And then it will affect the branching fraction of B2S gamma, for example, by 12%. So also here, the tree level operators are important. Okay. And then finally, let me show you the example of a semi-leptonic operator. This is the semi-leptonic operator that can be generated by the tree level Q2 operator. No? Now, again, BSCCS operator emits a photon and the photon decays into leptons. This explains also why the lepton coupling is here with gamma mu. And you can again look through this, calculate the one loop corrections. The Wilson coefficients at the height scale from one loop corrections, like also QCD penguin operators enter here, for example, because the mixing of these operators in the semi-leptonic operator are more complicated. But in the end, you will also find that C2 makes some contribution here, but not so much as before in the others. Okay, so I just like to note that the tildes here mean that I have chosen a slightly different convention for the QCD and QED penguin operators, and also for discharge current ones. But nevertheless, the mixing is similar. Okay, so now I have introduced you to all these operators in the effective theory for delta B equals one decay. And I've shown you a bit how they arise and how mixing is important in this to know the Wilson coefficients at the low scale. And what we have at this position now is an effective theory Lagrangian, and we can go on and let me give you a little outlook. We have decoupled the heavy degrees of freedom and restricted to dimension six. With the randomization group equation, we can resum large logarithms. And we could also include new physics effects by adding just new operators. And what we need next is to calculate observables. And since the quarks are now confined in B-meson states and light hadron states, it's more difficult. And we need to know some non-perturbative physics compared to the simple muon decay, where we only needed to know QED. And for this, we need hadronic matrix elements, and there are different ones. So decay constants, that is V goes to vacuum, or local transition form factors from V goes to some light meson. And there can be even more complicated things like a non-local objects that I will talk about in the last lecture. So in the next lecture, I will talk about the how we calculate observables with the help of decay constants and local form factors for leptonic and semi-leptonic charged current decays. And yes, that's it for the time being. So if you have questions.